Hello and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway and I'm studying the myths and religions of the world and looking for inspiration in them for fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through Haitian voodoo, and today we're going to be taking a look at two more of the loa, the spirits or deities that are central to this religious practice. And we're going to be taking a look at two loa who are very different from each other, but I think complement each other in interesting ways. Let's start with Dambala. Dambala, or Dambala Wedo, which is what he's typically called, we'll talk about the origin of that name in a moment, is one of the better known loa. He's not Bawon Samdi, but he's definitely up there. I would say, you know, my first exposure to this loa was probably one of the Gabriel Knight series of video games. I think the first one is the one that has voodoo. Not that it has a very, you know, realistic view of it. It's all about kind of occultism and whatnot. But certainly it name drops a lot of voodoo concepts. The name Dambala Wedo comes from the city of Wedo or Ouidah in what is today Benin. And this town, actually, Ouidah is the European name for the town. But my understanding is that it actually refers to the whole region. And the town has a different name, but Europeans called the town Ouidah. And it was a major center of the Atlantic slave trade. And so this name, like a lot of the family names of the loa, is a regional or local name from West Africa. So Dambala is a snake spirit and, you know, is often depicted as a snake. His veve shows a snake. He doesn't have a lot of the associations that we typically see from snake gods in fantasy games, although I might say that he has some traits in common with, you know, other real-life snake deities. He is associated very much with natural phenomena, most notably rainbows. If you've ever read the book The Serpent and the Rainbow, or it was made into a film, wasn't it? Isn't that the one with, is it Bill Pullman goes to Haiti? I honestly don't remember. Anyway, the title of the book, The Serpent and the Rainbow, comes from that association of Dambala with rainbows. He's definitely one of the more cosmic loa, certainly one of the more cosmic ones we've talked about in this show so far. Take someone like Gede. Gede has a very powerful cosmic brief, but he behaves in a very human way, and Dambala is much more overtly non-human. Some have suggested that this is connected to his age. He's said to be one of, or even the, oldest loa, and that gives him this kind of like primordial quality. He's sort of simpler and less civilized and more associated with nature than some of the others. In the Dahomey religious tradition where he originates, he's one of the creators of the universe, and he's connected to the concept of ancestor veneration, but not specifically any ancestor. He is a manifestation of the cosmic life force that connects ancestors with their descendants, rather than of any particular ancestor or any particular descendant. So Metro sees the difference between the West African Dambala, this cosmic being. Sometimes it's Dambala with an N, sometimes it's Dambala with an M. I'm not being consistent. You know, spellings and pronunciations are very varied. Metro thinks that this is an example of the kind of, he uses the word like degradation or degeneration of Haitian voodoo compared to its African ancestors. So, you know, he thinks that in West Africa, Dambala is this cosmic concept with an important role in how the world was made, who embodies an important, like, philosophical idea, whereas in Haitian voodoo, he's like a big snake. Now, a couple of things to say about this interpretation, which I don't think I agree with. First off, I suppose that we cannot say that Metro is being racist here, since both of the religious traditions he's talking about consist mainly of people of African descent, and indeed, the one that is the more Europeanized cultural practice is the one that he thinks is more primitive and materialistic. So there's that, I suppose. But at the same time, I guess I don't think that's a very helpful way to think about how religions relate to each other. One of these isn't an inferior version of the other. They are versions of the same concept that are used in very different cultural and social contexts. So that's sort of point one. But point two, I'm not sure that Metro's idea that these concepts of Dambala aren't present in the voodoo loa, I'm not sure that's the case at all. I think Dambala still retains a little of that connection to the cosmic life force. You know, I think his association with nature in Vodou is not just like, oh, he hangs around in ponds and trees because that's where snakes are. One aspect of this kind of cosmic version of Dambala in Haitian Vodou is that the Potomitan, the pillar that connects the earth with the world of the Loi, or with the heavens, that is kind of the central feature of a Vodou Hanfo traditionally, is sometimes called the Poto Dambala. So, you know, this idea that the rainbow connects different worlds or different parts of the world. And there are some elements of Dambala's worship that suggest he's seen as being very kind of sacred, even by comparison with some of the other Loi. So, take Gede, for example. Like all other Loi, when you deal with Gede, you have to know what to avoid and what to offer. But in the case of Gede, it's a little bit like knowing the personality of a human. Gede just has particular preferences. You know, they might behave like what we would call taboos, but they're not understood as what we would call taboos. It's more like, it's almost like entertaining a guest. Gede likes this food, he likes that drink, he tells this kind of jokes, and you need to respond appropriately. It's like having a meeting with someone important and wanting to make sure that you put them in a good mood. Well, Dambala also has those kinds of restrictions, but they're presented a lot less socially and in much more of an abstract way. So for instance, Dambala likes food that's white. The Dambala offering par excellence is a single egg on a mound of white flour. Not exactly a delicious dish, but everyone understands that this whiteness symbolizes Dambala's purity, and there are lots of other purity ideas in the way that Dambala is presented. He doesn't get involved with things that are dirty. Or to make him even less human, Dambala can't talk. So if he is riding someone, the shval just makes noises, doesn't hold conversations. There's like traditional hissing or clicking sounds that the person being ridden by Dambala makes. He doesn't crack jokes or boast or flirt or complain, but just being near him can bring good luck. It can bring spiritual rather than physical healing or cleansing. You know, having said that, what I have said is that's the pretty standard description of Dambala. He's described like that to some extent by Metro, and he's described like that by Karen McCarthy Brown. He is an impersonal force of good who just sort of imparts blessings on those who are around him. Except in Mama Lola, Karen McCarthy Brown echoes that description, but then tells multiple stories in which Dambala actually does express a view or makes particular demands of a serviteur in much the same way as any other Loi might. You know, communicating through dreams, in one instance, or communicating through other forms of divination, which Dambala has access to just like any other Loi would. So we have to return to a point that we've made previously, which is that Haitian Vodou doesn't really have hard and fast rules. So it would be better to say that the Loi who is writhing on the ground making clicking noises, well, that's probably Dambala. But that doesn't mean that every time you see Dambala, they're writhing around making clicking noises. Like any other Loi, Dambala can appear in multiple forms and communicate in multiple ways. Dambala is a married Loi. His wife is Aida Wedo, although we have also seen references already in this podcast to him being married to Esli Frida. The saint most associated with Dambala is Saint Patrick, and I presume that that is because Saint Patrick is often pictured driving the snakes out of Ireland. This is often said to be a metaphor for driving druids out of Ireland, which I think is something you can only believe if you've never read any of the texts about the life of St. Patrick, because they're full of stuff about him fighting druids. Asterisk, the word may not mean druid in the sense that we understand it. I don't think there's particularly any evidence that there were druids in Ireland. If I keep saying Iceland instead of Ireland, I really apologize. That's a continental thing, like Julius Caesar talks about druids. The Irish word that is used might mean druid. I believe it's related to the word druid, but it clearly, within the context, means something like sorcerer. But St. Patrick spends a lot of time driving wizards and or pagan priests out of Ireland. So why would he use a metaphor to describe that? You know, why would they use an analogy to conceal St. Patrick fighting druids? St. Patrick is very open about fighting druids. Anyway, whatever. Point is, drove the snakes out of Ireland, therefore has a snake in his iconography, therefore is connected to Dambala. Same goes for Moses as a representation of Dambala, and I assume that that is because Moses has, you know, turns the rod into a serpent, which serpent, Dambala. Okay, next up we have Kuzan Zaka. So if Dambala is one of the least human of the Loi that we've seen so far, Kuzan Zaka is one of the most human. He's often described as a loi of farming or of the harvest, and that is true, but I think it's more the case that he is the farmer loi, in the same way that you could say that Ogun is the war god, but it's more like he's the warrior god. For a lot of pantheons, and this would be one of them, it is as valuable to think about deities in terms of the role they play rather than like the brief that they hold. So one of the interesting things about Kuzan Zaka, who's also called Papa Zaka or Azaka or Azaka Mede, he has a personality trait that you don't find very often in divine beings, which is that he's shy and sort of socially awkward. Kuzan Zaka is not very self-confident or sophisticated. And I would say that this is because, in some ways, he represents this view of a Haitian farmer or peasant that might be held by an urbanite. He's quite unsophisticated. He wears a blue denim outfit and a broad-brimmed hat, which are sort of the stereotypical clothes of the Haitian farmer, just like if you see someone in an American illustration wearing overalls and a checked shirt and a feed cap, you know that person's a farmer, even if they aren't, and even if definitely not all farmers look or dress like that. He also smokes a pipe, and he's often shown eating. Kuzan Zaka is a little bit of a glutton, and again, I think this idea is that, you know, he's a poor man. He's not going to turn down a free meal. So Zaka's most famous accoutrement is probably his sack that he carries, another utilitarian item that would be strongly associated with Haitian country folk. Sometimes this sack, I mean, there's a bunch of different names for these types of bags, but sometimes you'll see it called a makut. That, of course, is the same word as in the name of the feared Haitian secret police, the Tonton Makout, whose name means something like Uncle Gunny Sack. And the idea being that this is a sort of boogeyman-like character who will, you know, put you in his sack. Kuzan, the other part of his name, is exactly what it sounds like, a word that means cousin. But Kuzan isn't always literally your cousin. It's just something you can call a man when you want to address him in a friendly way. So it's the equivalent of being like buddy or pal or mate. And that's what Zaka is like. He's your buddy. He's your pal. He's a friendly, caring person who overall has a pretty good attitude. He's a helpful character. I didn't talk about the other aspects of Dambala, but he does have a patois aspect. Kuzan Zaka doesn't. You know, he's just a nice guy who likes helping people. But he's very shy. He's very nervous around other people, and sometimes he's a little suspicious. Specifically, Kuzan Zaka is very open to the possibility that somebody is trying to take advantage of him. He doesn't like it, for example, when people like reach into his bag. If you are making an offering to Kuzan Zaka, sometimes you will put something into his bag. But if you do that, he might think that you're trying to take something out of it. So you should always tell him what you're doing so that he won't be nervous. And again, I think that this idea of feeling like somebody's going to take advantage of you, that's something that country folk arriving in the big city might very well be worried about. So Zaka represents nature and the countryside and farming, especially in opposition to a more sophisticated urban world. These differences between urban and rural culture are very important during periods in history, which is a lot of them, where urbanization is taking place. Whether that's rural workers moving to the big cities in 18th or 19th century Europe or America, or in things like the Middle Ages, where the growth of trade led to an increase in population in relatively small medieval cities. In addition to representing, you know, the urbanization of a rural working class, Zaka has kind of nature associations, part of a group of nature spirits. The other Zakas seem to be nature associated. So for example, there's a loi called Azaka Tonnerre, who is, as the name implies, the loi who's associated with thunderstorms. Now, like a lot of other loi, Kuzan Zaka is not necessarily alone. He's associated with a loi called Kuzin, who is basically his feminine counterpart. And the stereotype that she embodies is the stereotype of the market woman. So these small business women who work independently in open air markets, they're very important parts of the Haitian economy. Haiti is one of the poorest nations in the region. Indeed, I believe it's one of the poorest nations in the world. It has a very high level of informal economic activity, much of it done by women. Traditionally, the countryside has this division of labor where, like, if you're farming, you know, the sort of person who's responsible for or in charge of the actual farming will be the, you know, husband or father. But then women in the family are responsible for selling the farm's produce. And so this stereotype of the market woman, of the woman as like the economic mediator of the family unit, that's, you know, something that I guess would be associated with those types of communities and therefore embodied in cuisine. I couldn't find out as much about cuisine as Kuzanzaka, but it seems like she's basically a similar kind of rural stereotype. Like a lot of Lwa, Kuzanzaka likes rum. There's a description, I've run across a number of descriptions where rural men in particular will have just like their jug of spiced rum or clairin, which we've talked about before. And not just spiced, but it might have like herbs in it that are believed to have medicinal properties or that just give it a strong flavor. And it's sort of like the thing that they make you drink when you're new in town. Like it's a thing you do to people to kind of test them, is make them drink this very strongly flavored liquor. I don't know, like the stereotype would be something like if you go to Chicago and they make you drink Jepson's Malort, right? Like a thing you do to haze the new guys, or drinking Baijiu in China. Seeing if you can take it, but also having a little like bonding moment by playing a good-natured prank on the visitor. So Kuzan and Kuzin are very down-to-earth, very kind of everyday deities with a strong connection to ordinary working people. And that's why I said that they were kind of opposites, because Damballa is this cosmic force attached to big, like, magical or celestial concepts, and then Kuzan and Kuzin are very much like people, and not just people, but small people. They're not, you know, they don't even have the ambitions or pretensions of greatness that you get with someone like, you know, some of the more swaggering Oguns or some of the more self-satisfied Ezlis, or, you know, people like Baon. Like, Baon Samdi is an important person. He's convinced of his own centrality to the conversation, and Kuzanzaka really isn't. And that's very interesting. You know, the almost all role-playing games have direct contact between player characters and the divine as a huge thing that happens, you know, once or twice a campaign, maybe, and which is meant to be accompanied by a feeling of overwhelming awe. But in Voodoo, contact between the Serviteur and the Loi happens all the time. It's not an everyday occurrence, but it is a regular occurrence, and it's certainly considered to be important and significant, but at the same time, these deities have relationships with their worshippers, relationships that go to the point of intimate relationships. We've talked about the idea that people can consider themselves married to a particular Lwa. And that close relationship, that's very, I don't want to say normal, but I think it's not as unheard of in the world of religion as we like to think. But it's odd in role-playing games, and it'd be kind of neat to see it appear more frequently. So all right, that's about all of the Haitian voodoo that we have time for today. In our next episode, once again, we're going to take a look at some other Lwa and maybe going to do a couple more in shorter descriptions. We'll see how it all works out. But I didn't want to do this series without talking about Kuzanzaka, who I think is a really interesting contrast between... Like, Kuzanzaka is also very different from how we think of voodoo, right? Like Ogun brandishing his saber, or Gede like with his one eye to see into the afterlife, or Damballa, a cosmic serpent. You know, they have much more complex and interesting theologies attached to them, but we can fit them into movie voodoo. But Kuzanzaka, not really. He's concerned with the kinds of things that people are concerned about, and he just represents a religion that isn't like this theatrical understanding of Haitian voodoo. And that's one of the reasons I like him. And so hopefully we'll see more of that when we look at some more of the Lwa of Haitian voodoo next time on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.